Good afternoon. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, April 15th. I'm Molly Dishner. Thanks for joining us. Coming up this week, with 2 days left in the legislative session, we'll hear from our local representative about what's left to be done and if he thinks they'll wrap up on time.
And, of course, we have a number of so-called revenue measures floating around out there, a capital budget, and, boy, a few other items, and all this to be done by Sunday, with expectation, I think, by most that we're going to go past the 90-day limit on Sunday.
But while the legislators may be late, fish and game biologist Tim Sands says the herring may be early.
Earliest I think we've ever seen fish might have been the 22nd, but the earliest we ever opened it was the 25th. So this is much, much earlier than we've ever seen.
Last week on this program, Sands said that he intends to give the drifters more fishing time on the flood this summer. This week, a rebuttal from the drifter who made the request.
The critical thing, the floods are more productive to fish. Nobody wants to start at the bottom of the tide at low water. There'd be very little fish to the district because you would have that line fishery.
Plus, BBNA's new natural resources director introduces himself, and a quick trip to find out what's happening in Togiak this week, other than the banishings.
But it's taking our generation away. The alcohol and the drugs, it's just taking it away from us. And here we pray for a better future. We wish people for a better future, but how can it happen?
Those stories and more coming up after a quick look back at some of the week's news. Togiak's been a hot spot lately. Much of Bristol Bay let out a collective sigh of relief when a standoff between law enforcement and an armed man ended peacefully on Monday morning. 22-year-old Michael Polson had barricaded himself in his house while intoxicated on Sunday. A negotiator convinced him to surrender on Monday. And the Togiak Traditional Council took a stand on some of the activity they say is unhealthy and a detriment to the community, banishing a Dillingham man who they believe is responsible for bringing drugs and alcohol into the dry community. Jimmy Kupchayak is the traditional council president.
I think we need to do this to protect our future children and our elders because they're vulnerable. It's been getting worse, and we're saying enough is enough.
Also this week, the Federal Subsistence Board met in Anchorage and made some changes to the hunt for Nooshigak Peninsula caribou, which has been growing larger than biologists say is sustainable. For the caribou hunt in Unit 17A and 17C on the Togiak National Wildlife Refuge, the season dates are now August 1st through March 31st, and the bag limit is up to 5. Next winter, same-day airborne will also be allowed, but that's just January 1 through March 31st. All of those regulations just for residents of the 7 communities. In Juneau, lawmakers have picked up the pace of their work. A bill that would strictly regulate who can provide sex ed died in committee, but then the same concept resurfaced in another bill. The Senate has signed off on some changes, including to how the Power Cost Equalization Fund is used, adding a requirement for physical activity at school, and giving the state park system the ability to raise more of its own revenue. All of those still need the okay from the House. We'll hear more on all of that sausage making later in the show. A bit of good news after some nail biting this week. Many waited anxiously for news of the two Kenai Peninsula skiers who went for a day ski on a glacier and got stuck when the weather turned. Unlike much of the week's news, it was a bright spot. The Alaska Air National Guard rescued Soldotna's Jennifer Nyman and Chris Hanna after 4 unplanned nights of camping. Staff Sergeant Edward Egerton credits at least some of that to the satellite locator beacon they were carrying.
They were able to communicate their situation to other people, and they were able to communicate their location. And so it gave us an idea of where to go, as opposed to having to wait for the weather to clear so that they can perform a search, which, you know, with the size of the area, could have added days to finding them, if at all. So in this case, it gave our people the ability to know exactly where they were going.
Not everyone was so lucky when it came to the elements. We heard about an avalanche that killed a man near Summit Lake on Monday, the death of 3 in a southeast Alaska plane crash last week, and others missing in inclement weather. But there's also a little bit of new life here in the Bay. The first reindeer babies were born in Port Hyde this week. John Christensen called this morning with the latest.
We have 3 reindeer babies so far. 2 were born yesterday, and we are expecting more anytime.
None of them are named yet, but Christensen says they're a welcome addition to the community. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond. I'm Molly Dishner. Lawmakers are scrambling to finish up their work before the session's scheduled end on Sunday. Right now, they're holding a confirmation hearing for the governor's appointments to various boards and commissions, including the boards of Fish and Game. Yesterday afternoon, Representative Bryce Edgman took a minute to tell me where things were at. Hi, Bryce. Thanks for taking a moment today.
My pleasure.
What bills were on the move in Thursday's floor session?
Well, let's see. Today, of course, is Thursday. I have to remind myself because we're working every day and long hours for the most part. We had a number of bills on the floor today. Of most importance, I would point to omnibus health care bill that we heard its first hearing today and took amendments. Tomorrow we'll actually hear the bill. And that bill is out there with a big crime bill, big oil tax legislation bill. And, of course, we have a number of so-called revenue measures floating around out there, a capital budget, and, boy, a few other items, and all this to be done by Sunday with expectation, I think, by most that we're going to go past the 90-day limit on Sunday.
Lots of moving pieces there. Do you think the governor's income tax bill is going to get anywhere in these last couple days?
You know, I don't think so. It may actually get a up or down vote on the House floor. We don't know that for sure, but that seems to be the direction that it's heading in at this point. But in terms of it being seriously considered by the House and Senate, or let's say being passed and sent to the governor for a signature, I just don't see that this session, at least at this point. But there will be other tax bills, such as the mining, fisheries taxes, motor fuels taxes. 3 of those have been lumped into one bill. So I'm getting up to speed on that bill with the taxes that are, of course, very important to rural Alaska and to our district in particular with the fishing end of things. So, yes, absolutely. A lot of things sort of converging, coming together here in the last few days.
Sounds good. And just a little refresher for our listeners, what happens to bills that don't pass in the next couple days? Are they dead this year?
One of 2 things. One, if they don't pass by the 90-day session limit, they could just sort of go away until next year where they essentially start all over again. Or if we extend session, just continue on past the 90 days, because the Constitution allows us to go up to 121 days at the very maximum, we could just continue business as usual, so to speak, so that everything that's on the table today continues on the table as we move forward to some sort of a final resolution on these bigger moving parts. So we don't know yet at this point. We'll know in a few days.
Sounds good. Last thing on our minds, I know the legislature's big job every year is the budget. Where's that at?
The budget right now, it's in 2 pieces, of course. On the operations side of things, the bills have been passed about a month ago or so. And both are at what we call a conference committee, where the House and the Senate co-chairs, finance committee members, are negotiating out the differences. And so we should be able to report on some significant progress there in a couple of days. And on the other side, the capital budget, I think everybody knows there isn't going to be much of a capital budget this year. But that is taking shape. And again, I think we'll probably have a capital budget here in the next 3 or 4 days as well.
Thanks so much for catching us up today, Representative Edgman.
Okay, it's my pleasure, Molly.
While lawmakers look like they'll once again be late finishing up their work, the little forage fish that spawn in Togiak each spring seem like they might be early. Area Management Biologist Tim Sands got an unexpected phone call to that effect on Thursday afternoon.
I got a call from somebody saying, hey, there's herring over in Togiak and spawn going off. We got in touch with the spotter pilot who's actually over there, and he reported that he saw herring and a fair amount, maybe not quite threshold biomass, but certainly a significant amount of herring showing up and some spawn.
But that doesn't mean the fishery will start right away. The regular standard is that the fishery can open once Fish and Game documents a threshold biomass of 35,000 tons. This year, things are a little different, and not just because of the timing. For one, the Fish and Game budget doesn't include herring surveys. Those are being funded by industry. Sands says he may go out to fly a survey Sunday, but also wants to see when processors will be ready to buy the fish. In a more typical year, Sands says the surveys start before fish are spotted. Once there are herring in the water, it's usually a couple days before there's threshold biomass, and then a couple more days until the fish are mature enough to be commercially viable.
My guess is that, you know, fish have been there for a couple days already, and there's probably threshold biomass around right now. There's certainly spawn reported. And so by Sunday or so, the fish would probably be commercially viable even. But there's nobody at this point positioned to harvest anything.
For those of you keeping track, Sands and his colleagues called this one just right. Last month, Fish and Game's only timing prediction was that it would all happen early this summer, or spring. Just how early is this?
We've never started fishing before the 25th. It used to be that you couldn't even open the fishery till the 25th, and that changed 2 board cycles ago or something, and maybe 3 now. And so now we could open it potentially as early as the 15th, which is today. Earliest I think we've ever seen fish. Might have been the 22nd, but the earliest we ever opened it was the 25th. So this is much, much earlier than we've ever seen.
No one knows exactly what causes the run timing, but Sands does have a pretty good idea of what might be causing this.
It's water temperature driven. As far as we know, the water temperature is at that 3-degree spot now, so it's just water temperature driven, and the water temperatures got there yesterday.
Maybe one quirk of this early spring sunshine in the bay. Back in a moment. Last Friday, KDLG's Dave Benninger spoke with Sands, who manages the Nooshigak Commercial Fishing District, about his plan to fish the fleet on more of the flood tide this summer. Sands said the changes will be based on the feedback he's been getting.
The general message that we got at the Board of Fish meeting and at the advisory committee meeting was, we're not happy with what you're doing now because it's not enough flood. We want more flood.
The drifter who asked for that change didn't let last Friday turn to Saturday before he asked us for a chance to rebut. Robert Hyano pulled his proposal at the Board of Fish that would have forced the change, but says the idea is still good, and he's not sure Sands understands it. He sat down with Dave Benninger this week to flesh it out a bit more.
Good to have you in, as always.
Good to be here again. Thank you.
You heard our conversation with Area Manager Tim Sands last week. This started with you. There was a proposal that went to the Nooshigak AC and passed. You pulled it at Board of Fish, but you weren't happy about what Tim said last week.
Well, I came away. I attended the local advisory committee and then obviously the meeting in Anchorage at the Board of Fish, and I guess I disagree with his comments on what the public was asking. I never heard once that I could recall where somebody publicly said, I support a line fishery, for one. And I know that isn't supported here in Anishinaabeg at all. Secondly, the other part is going to one tide a day just doesn't make any sense, especially on this big forecast. And I don't think that's what people were asking. What I heard is that people were asking for a little more time between the two openings so they can get offloaded, get ice, and things of that nature.
Now, what I've heard people who like the scheme now and Tim say is that going to more flood fishing time, nobody wants the line fishery. Nobody wants one tide a day, but it would create those outcomes, and that's why the scenario that's in place now or has been in place for a decade or so is working better. What changes would you like to see? Describe when you typically fish now and where you'd like to see that start differently.
Well, let's back up a little bit and a little bit of history. Before the allocation plan was adopted throughout all Bristol Bay, the managers had to open the drifters and the set netters at the same time. There was no mechanism where they can separate it. So if you look at the Nooshigak, it's 3 hours before high water or 2 hours depending on the size of the tide, incoming tide. And that's carryover from pre-allocation days. So with the allocation plan, now it gave the managers a lot more flexibility. They don't have to start at the same time. They don't have to quit at the same time. They just got to make sure that the numbers remain fairly close, whatever the allocation is. So we know that 3 hours creates a line fishery in Anishinaabeg from past experience. So I think the proposal I submitted said at least an hour flood.
Keeping our casual listener in mind, let's say high water at Clark's Point is 12 noon sharp. When would you like the drift fleet to open?
11 o'clock.
Okay.
Then. Yeah. A good hour of the flood, at least. Yes.
Set netters would be opened, let's say, 9 or 10 probably.
Right, yeah.
And you think, when do you open currently? If high water was at 12, when do you think you would normally be opened?
Well, it's kind of interesting, you know. And I think it varies on the big years, which the last few years have been big compared to when on a smaller year. I think we get a lot more ebb openings or high water openings on a smaller year. But this was submitted as an RC at the Board of Fish meeting, you know, and it shows in 2015, 8 of the 25 openings was less than an hour, so about a third. Approximately.
Less than an hour what?
Before book high tide.
Okay.
And then in 2014, 10 out of about 40 openings was less than an hour.
Okay, so you're not asking for the whole flood tide. If you don't want to fish the switch up, you want to fish an hour before and fish the ebb down.
Oh, yeah.
For 5 or 6 hours or whatever the opener is.
Whatever the time would allow. The critical thing, the floods are more productive to fish. So nobody wants to start at the bottom of the tide at low water. There'd be very little fish to the district because you would have that line fishery created, and then you have the problem, obviously, of putting fish into the district for the set netters. But it seems to me we got to try different things and see how they work. You know, going into this season here or last year, we faced about a 60% reduction in the base sockeye price. Well, our expenses don't go down. So the more time you spend catching the fish, the less you're going to make. So I think there's room to try different things without turning the apple cart upside down.
So this is a suggestion to the manager now at this point, and it was voiced by a number of people. Now, Tim Sands tells me that a number of people also support the way it's fished now. They think everybody's getting a good chance, and set netters included are getting plenty of fish up into the district. Smaller boats that we see a lot of in the Nooshigak local fleet get a good chance. They're not banging on the line. The scenario you're asking for here, do you think it has support, and do you think it would work if put into place, or is it worth just trying it this summer to see how it goes?
Well, I think if my, you can call it a theory, I guess, is right, where we can have more of a flood without creating a line fishery that stops fish from moving into the district, sure, obviously, it will. You know, if it creates a line fishery, then no, it won't. But I think based on this information, we probably know that it really doesn't. So it's... This is my point, I guess. The market is changing, the fishery is changing, the industry is changing. You have the processors and the fishermen putting a tremendous amount of money into their various operations, trying to increase the value. The third leg to this stool is the department. Managing fisheries to put them in a one-pound tall can is going to make us all go bankrupt. So I'm not saying that this is the perfect solution, but I think, in my experience, it will help. It would make us more productive and not create the line fishery such as they have in other districts.
Robert Hiano, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, back in a moment. Last week, the Togiak Traditional Council officially banished a Dillingham man who was thought to be importing illegal substances into the community. It's a hard line the tribe has drawn at a time when residents say alcohol and heroin use is spiking, violence and theft along with it. But the community has multiple ways of addressing these issues and of coping with the fallout. KDLG's Hannah Colton visited Togiak at the start of its 14th wellness conference this week and brings this story.
At the Togiak School Wednesday, the big central hall is being transformed from a lunchroom into an auditorium. Members of the Togiak Unity Youth Council are arranging chairs in rows in front of the stage. Josephine Gusuk, the youth council president, is at the sign-in table. She and the other dozen or so council members are hoping this three-day forum will be a chance to get more kids involved in the group.
Probably trying to help other people change in a way, you know, like try to get more people to come, and through like the different like fundraisers that we do and the conferences, we try to get to people about bullying and suicide. And
in this dry village of about 900 people, Gusuk says boredom can be a big problem for her peers.
There's barely anything to do here most of the time. We gotta find our own fun, and me and a few friends find our fun in hacky sack, and other people find it in basketball.
And it's no secret around town there are people who find their fun in more destructive activities.
Like, you know, there's a curfew here, and so, like, there's a certain time that the cops come out and they tell kids to go home, but it's for their safety. And they think it's funny to, like, not really listen to the cops and then run away and hide and still be out more.
Gusuk says she's always encouraging her nieces and nephews to go home at curfew.
Togiak's a small village, and someone could easily, like, get them to follow them and do crazy things like drugs or something like that, and it's not safe.
Anna Mae Ferguson started the Togiak Unity Youth Council 11 years ago. She's in her 60s now, and Ferguson says there was domestic violence and alcohol abuse when she was growing up in Togiak. But she says it's a different story now with heroin and other opiates.
It's just probably my crazy thinking, but anything can happen with the heroin user. I hear a lot of blue pill users. And when people who are using these, I am familiar with addiction. If you want to use it, you will stop at nothing.
Ferguson spends a lot of time working on getting kids into more positive environments. Her vision for how the community can heal is about reconnecting youth to the traditional culture through their elders.
We cannot take what our elders had in the past, but we can work on peace, the peace that they had, because their blood runs thick through us, giving us the self, pride, and identity that we so need to know who we are.
Back in the lower part of the village, near the city offices, some of that traditional knowledge is being put to good use. I find Sherry Abraham working outside in a white jacket covered in bright red duck blood. Her sons brought back 62 eiders from a hunting trip, and now she's in full-on bird cleaning mode.
These are the intestines. I love them. You clean them out and I eat them raw. And I just scraped some skin to eat the fat. That's, like, way better than butter.
With all this fresh food and rock music blasting in her earphones, it's a moment of happiness for Abraham.
as that sense of, kind of like I could say, pride, but more of a blessing to have something like this brought to us every day, food on the table instead of having to go to the store.
But like most people I talk to in town, the struggles stacked against her young people are at the top of her mind.
But it's taking our generation away. The alcohol and the drugs, it's just taking it away from us. And here we pray for a better future. We wish people for a better future, but how can it happen when we don't know nothing about it? You know, how to deal with this crap.
Abraham believes that most of the problems plaguing Togiak today stem from the introduction of the modern Western world. And she and others argue they should be getting more support from that world. There's a need for more education from behavioral health professionals, and there's a need for more law enforcement to aid the handful of overworked, unarmed VPSOs and tribal police officers in town. Back up at the school, all those issues are on the agenda for the wellness conference. Before the talking circles and workshops start, the day opens with a Yupik dance performance from the young people.
Else, please welcome the Duwek dancers.
After a few songs, the kids retreat to the school library and shut the door. Without an audience in front of them, their silliness comes out, and they start dancing again. The lead drummer is 19-year-old E.J. Arkanakiak. He tells me this is the cowboy song, and the kids learned the song from their late drummer, who passed away recently in a boating accident.
Yeah. Eric Kupchak, he passed away with the three hunters in January.
It's yet another layer of grief these kids are dealing with. But Arkanakiak says despite everything, this group still has fun together.
I want to work to keep teaching the younger generation to learn some Yupik dance.
Sometimes, he says, when they're feeling goofy, they like to mix the traditional drumming with some beatboxing. It's just a few teenagers playing around, but it's a hopeful soundtrack for the youth of Togiak. For KDLG, I'm Hannah Colton.
And finally this afternoon, one Bristol Bay youth who did go off to college and then come back. In February, Bristol Bay Native Association got a new director of natural resources. But he's not new to the Bay. In fact, he was born at Kanakanak 30 years ago this spring. Werner Wilson sat down to talk about why he left for college and what brought him back this year.
I was born and raised in Dillingham and lived here for 18 years, graduated from Dillingham High School and decided to go off to college on the East Coast because, to be honest, I just wanted to get out of here and get as far away as possible. I didn't really appreciate being from here back then, but, you know, after I moved away and I went to Brown University and I got my bachelor's degree, I realized how special of a place that Bristol Bay is and where I'm from. And you know, it really clicked when I was at Brown as I was entering into my 20s. And after being away for a couple of years, I realized, you know, I do want to come back. I want to spend time with friends and family. After hearing about all the potential threats to our region, that's when I dedicated myself to environmental causes and for natural resources sustainability. And so ever since then, I pretty much knew that I did want to come back and help with the cause to protect our region. I appreciate it now for what it is, and I realized during going to school that we need to do something to protect the region because there are a lot of threats out there, not just non-renewable resources like pebble mine and offshore drilling, but people who are trying to exploit the resources to the detriment of the native people and you know, the people who live here year-round, no matter if you're native or not, our residents. My grandpa, for example, is from Finland, and he came here to utilize those rich resources, and we need to make sure that they're sustainable, and that's what encouraged me to be going into the environmental field and natural resources field to help ensure that our resources are sustainable well into the future. I used to think that I was bored when I was younger, when I was going to middle school, high school here, but how I passed the time was studying and really engaging myself in the community. And I would encourage the youth to really be involved with the community and to study hard, because that's when I started doing that. I would really say to youth that high school especially is very important to projecting yourself in the future. We have big shoes to fill. Our leaders have done a great job in helping to protect the resource and to pass on the values. I mean, I'm thinking about the state of Alaska, for example, and how the budget cuts that really hurt a lot of people. And everyone, especially here in Bristol Bay, I think we do depend on federal dollars and state dollars. I think it is going to be a challenge in to coming up, and the greatest challenge, I think, is to coming up with those solutions to the budget, to the future for our region, and ensuring that people could live here. I decided to go to Yale because it is a great program, and a lot of our leaders in the natural resources and environmental field, they had gone to school at Yale School of Forestry and Environmental Studies. So it's amazing to see the alumni back there and to hear what they've done. I mean, a lot of environmental nonprofits were started by people who went to that school. I really felt like going back there, I brought my voice and my concerns to my studies and to the institution, and they were very receptive and they were very encouraging and supportive. You know, being in Providence and in New Haven, I saw what their rivers were like, for example, and how they were so polluted that they couldn't support the abundant fisheries that they might have once had. So looking on the Providence River, for example, and seeing all the garbage and hearing about how the mobsters would dump bodies in them, for example, and I just really appreciate our clean environment that we have here and our elders who've worked hard to conserve our resources. There's nothing like, you know, getting on the boat in the summer. It's, even though it can be hard work, there's those moments that you look out in the water and it's just so, especially after working so hard and plugging into the computer all day and studying a lot at Yale, this past summer was just refreshing because I got to do that hard physical work instead of just studying and staring at the computer. So that's one of the reasons why I love it here so much, is because, you know, you meet so many great people out in the water, and I have so many great memories spending time with my family and seeing the beauty and the abundance that Bristol Bay has to offer.
Again, that was Werner Wilson, the new Natural Resources Director at BBNA. That's it for this week's show. You can find this and past episodes of Bristol Bay and Beyond at our website, kdlg.org. Keep that feedback and those story ideas coming. Send emails to news@kdlg.org or reach us here at the station anytime. I'm Molly Dishner. We'll see you back here next week.